It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Last year, we introduced listeners to Delmont native Darren Miller as he prepared for the fourth leg of his quest to swim the seven most difficult ocean channels. One year later, Darren Miller is closing in on his quest to become the first American man and second person in history to swim the Ocean Seven. It's an athletic challenge in which swimmers must swim the seven most difficult ocean channels. Later this summer, Darren leaves for the British Isles, where he will swim the North Channel between Ireland and Scotland. Darren Miller, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
How are you doing today?
Well, thank you. How are you? How are you
excellent.
Feeling?
It's always beautiful to be down here in this excellent studio being interviewed, so thank you so much.
Your completion of the Ocean Seven is not for personal glory. The swims help bring attention to your charity. Tell our listeners about Team Forever and the Forever Fund.
As I've said before, I'm not doing this to get my name in the papers. The bottom line is I found a way through the grace of God to be given something, to be given a means to raise awareness. And when I tell people, and you talk about swimming in the middle of the night with great white sharks, people can tell you're very serious about what you're doing. So I have a full sponsor, Trustmont Financial Group out of Greensburg, that has footed the bill for 100% of the cost involved in five out of the last six swims. That allows us to give 100% of every dollar that we fundraise through my website at darren-miller.com. That website takes in donations, and we funnel all of that right back to the Forever Fund. The Forever Fund was started in 2009 and continues to this day. We've raised over $60,000 through the Heart Center, through the Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh, and 100% of those dollars go toward helping families incur the cost of prescription costs, travel costs, lodging, food, whatever it is that we can help simplify in their life so they could focus the most on their child. And we have plenty of success stories on the website. If any listener would be interested in bringing me in to speak to their group, I would love to do things like that. I don't take a cost. I love getting the word out there any way that I can.
And we'll put a link to your website at our website, WESA.FM. Well, since we last spoke, you have completed two swims, the Suguru Channel in Japan and the Cook Strait in New Zealand. Tell me how those two swims went.
Well, the Suguru Channel in Japan was a very unique challenge. It was a 16-hour jolt between the northern island of Honshu and Hokkaido. And this body of water is very unknown to the rest of the world, and including myself, prior to being over there to do it. But at the time, that was the first effort by an American since 1990 to actually complete that channel. So at the time, there's only about seven or eight people that ever had done it before. I was very excited to get up there. Every day was a challenge, getting used to the food, getting used to the atmosphere, getting used to the water. Not too cold. It was about 66, 67 degrees, so that really wasn't an issue. Starting off the coast of Honshu, we left around 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. We expected it to be about an 8-hour swim. It wasn't really that far of a distance. I believe it was only about 14 or 15 miles, which is shorter than most of the ones I have completed. And just a typical, the boat, myself in the water, another boat was the scout boat, went in front of us, made sure the currents, tides, everything was flowing the right way. And we got to about the 8-hour point, and I realized I was probably only about halfway across that body of water.
Oh, my goodness.
So the Sea of Japan kind of had a nice outflow, flowing from west to east. And if you look at the tracker online, the spot tracker, which pinpointed my exact way that I had went, we got to about 5 miles from the coast, and I got blown back out to about 8 miles, and then just did a roundabout. Finally, at the last second, made a 90-degree turn, and somehow was able, by the grace of God, to come into the Hokkaido coast. Every hour, I would look up the boat, and it was one of those like, how far am I? How far am I? And they would keep saying, 5 miles, 5 miles. 5 miles, like every, and eventually they're just keep swimming.
Yeah, what keeps you going in a situation like that?
Well, I think you have to remember what you're doing it for. You know, for me, I look at it as a concept of we're helping these families. I'm thinking about them a lot. Luckily, I've been close to a lot of these families recently, which means a lot to me because I look at it from a concept that I refer to as the three boats. So I have the two boats that are in the water with me, and then the third boat is the one where it's my family that I've lost, maybe friends that I've lost. And all it comes down to is you have to have something that pushes you through that because your body's telling you to stop a lot. And for me, it's always that third boat that I visualize when I'm just getting tired, beaten down. My body's just telling me to stop. I look over and I see my grandparents just telling me to keep going. Don't give up, you know. The Forever Fund at the hospital goes to benefit the infant cardiothoracic ward of Children's.
So you keep those things in mind.
Those are the kind of things I think about all the time. Absolutely. No matter what I go through, no matter how hard I'm getting beat down out there, I know it's nothing compared to what they go through.
Well, that's quite a story, and we haven't even gotten to the Cook Strait in New Zealand yet. So before we talk about what's next, how about New Zealand?
New Zealand was an incredible country. Everybody's running, cycling, kayaking, swimming, just a very active culture. We had about a week to get used to the water. So it was a Sunday night, and we were notified typically about 8 p.m. as to whether we were going or not the next day. So it was 8 p.m. on Sunday. Nope, we can't go tomorrow. Tides, currents, conditions, whatever. It was bad. Monday night, same thing. Tuesday night, same thing. Wednesday night. Finally on Thursday, we were able to go. So after a four-day waiting period, which was very, very hard because it was the first time I actually had to wait to go for a swim. So you kind of have that resounding feeling like, oh my God, what if I don't get a chance to go? What if we just flew literally halfway around the world and don't get a chance to go? So getting into it, we left that Thursday morning. It was an absolutely beautiful day. Weather was calm. Water was pretty calm at the start. Sun was shining. Birds were chirping. It was a beautiful day. We had two boats in the water, two rubber inflatables, as ribs, they call them. They're in the water with us. We had a main boat beside us. And as we went across, my buddy and I, we got to about the 8-9 hour mark, and then all of a sudden we noticed that the sun was starting to go down, starting to get cold, the water was starting to drop a little bit, and the current was just throwing us to the north. Again, similar to Japan, we were again caught in this tide that we could not, it was quite a struggle to try to push through. So at that point, it was getting dark, and I realized that we actually split up a little bit. I just started taking off for the coast. It was pitch black. And I remember just sprinting in as hard as I could because I could just feel that tide pushing me north when I was trying to swim west. You know, just pushing, pushing, pushing. And finally, I was able to touch that wall. And it was 10 hours, 42 minutes later, successful at swimming across the Cook Strait in New Zealand.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer on 90.5 WESA. We're visiting with Delmont native Darren Miller as he continues his quest to complete the Ocean's Seven, an athletic challenge in which swimmers must swim the seven most difficult ocean channels. He has one more swim left to go from Ireland and Scotland across the North Channel. And Darren, what challenge have you set for yourself once you complete the Ocean Seven?
Well, I think the biggest challenge right now is I need to focus on is the North Channel. Between now and about 2 months from now, between the time that I leave, this challenge in itself is unlike any of the other six. The main reason for that is the water is much colder than any of the other ones.
Why have you saved the North Channel for last?
It's the most difficult. I figure if I made it through six, then I can make it through the final seventh one. I wanted to get a good base build up prior to heading over to Ireland, because if you look at the 12, 13 people that have been successful since 1927, typically these are people that live in Ireland, Scotland, or England. So it's no longer what I look at as marathon swimming. It's more like survival. How long can I survive? Because I at 225, 30 pounds, I am a big guy, but I do not have the size that some of these people do.
Well, if you're swimming, though, in colder water, does that keep the sharks away? My understanding is that sharks don't like that particular
up
climate.
Up in that body of water, northern seas like that, there's not a lot of oxygen in the water, in the English Channel, in the Irish Sea, in the North Sea, things like that. So the biggest challenge we face outside of the hypothermia is the lion's mane jellyfish. They're all over the place there. You're typically going to get stung 100, 200 times on a swim across this body of water. So again, it's not only how does your body handle the hypothermic conditions, but can your body handle being stung by jellyfish that many times?
You're simply resigned to the idea that you're going to get stung hundreds of times?
What I like to say is you have to focus on looking at it from the worst case scenario. So the water's going to be freezing. I'm going to get stung a ton of times. Luckily, my body will probably be so cold I won't really feel these things as much. But again, the toxins will still be going into your system. I feel that my strategy is to work and focus on speed and to keep that fuel, keep that fire going in my gut so I don't start to succumb and start to get cold. Because once you start going down that slope, it's a very slippery one. And how you're able to tell the number one way to find hypothermia in a swimmer is that their stroke count will begin to decline.
How do you train for these swims?
All I can do is train myself physically. Physically and mentally. I can train myself physically as much as I want. I can swim 8, 10, 12-hour stints out in the ocean. I can go up to Lake Erie. I swim at Keystone Lake out in Derry, Pennsylvania, in a flat water pool. that's really all I have. So I'm at a significant disadvantage. I think a lot of people don't realize that, because you look at it from a standpoint of, I don't live near an ocean. I don't live where the water is year-round 53 degrees, or even in Ireland where the water is that cold. You can consistently train in that kind of water. That's why I plan to be over there at least 2 weeks ahead of time, every single day in that water, to the point where I can't move anymore, being pulled out every day, because I have to find a way to adjust myself to that temperature.
Darren Miller is planning to swim the North Channel between Northern Ireland and Scotland this summer in his quest to complete his swims of the 7 most difficult ocean channels. For more information or to donate, again, visit www.darren-miller.com. We'll have a link at our website at wesa.fm. Darren Miller, good luck. Thank you for taking the time to join us again here on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that will do it for today's edition of Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We'll see you again with another edition of Essential Pittsburgh.